family. I'm Dawn. I'm Natick. And I'd like to thank Liz for sharing. At this time, we have our second speaker, and Betty from Tri-County.
Hello, family. I'm an addict, and my name is Betty. And I'd also like to thank the programming committee for asking me to come up and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I'd like to thank the God of my understanding for giving me this chance at recovery, you know, that I didn't die out there from the horrors of addiction. A lot of people don't get to make it here. This is for the people that really want it, not for the ones that need it. If it was the ones that need it, this convention center would not be big enough. You know, I feel blessed. I have had so many blessings in recovery, and I feel so fortunate to have found you people as my family, that you understand me. And when I came in and I felt so welcome and so at home, that I could call you family, even from the beginning, you know, and everyone at home was mad at me, you know, I couldn't show my face, and, you know, I was in trouble everywhere, and I came in here, and y'all hugged me, and y'all said, keep coming back, and you said, you know, that I would get better, and when I looked around at some of the women, it was hard for me to believe they were like me. You know, they're wearing them dresses and nice suits, and they got their hair done and all these things. And I thought, you couldn't possibly have been living the life I was living. And when someone came to pick me up from a rehab one time, I couldn't believe this woman said that she was an addict. And I just looked at her and said, she got to be lying. You know, I just can't believe that. And now I know. By looking at people and by living this thing, anyone can get this. Anyone. You know, I've met some people that struggle with it, but that doesn't mean they can't get it. If they keep trying, if they keep doing what they need to do, it says in the book that never have we met anyone who has followed this program and not made it. You know, and that gave me hope. I said, no matter how far down I've gone, they said I could make it. You know, and I see people making it, so why can't I do it too? And when I first came in, my husband, he was so fed up with me, he would take me to a meeting and drop me off and tell me, get a ride home, because he wanted me to get to know people. And so I'd have to go up to someone and say, my name's Betty, can I get a ride home? You know, I live way down here, and where I'm at down in Southern Maryland, it was a drive to take me home. And it was at least, you know, 15, 20 minutes out of their way. They weren't even going that way. So it made me reach out. And I think he knew what he was doing, you know. And a lot of times people would ask me, you know, do you want to go out for coffee? And do you want to, you know, get a bite to eat at IHOP or whatever? And I'd say, well, I don't have any money, you know, because when we come in, we got no money and, you know, in the hole and all that. And they said, we didn't ask you if you had any money. We asked you if you wanted to go out for coffee. And I just couldn't believe it. These people don't want anything from me. You know, they're not trying to get in my pocket, my wallet. You know, they don't want to come over my house and see what I have that I can pawn or anything. They just love me for me. And when it says in here, we don't care what you have. You know, we don't care where you've been. We don't care who your connections were, how much or how little you have. Just what you want to do about your problem. And it wasn't just words. They meant it. And that meant the world to me. And I wanted to stay in meetings. I didn't really want to go home because I knew my husband was mad at me and the kids. I was all, you know, I felt terrible. I'd let everybody down. And, you know, I wasn't being a good wife or a good mother. And you know, I was working, but I was spending all the money. You know, it wasn't coming home. I only worked to use. And I had nothing to be proud of, you know. And I was so sick of living that way. And I didn't know there was a way out. And I can remember we had moved out to the West Coast and thought, well, maybe it'll be different out there, you know, that geographical change. And of course, you know, it wasn't any different, just the surroundings were different. And it got worse. It got much worse. And got evicted and car repossessed. And I thought, if I didn't answer the door, maybe they won't take my car, you know. But yeah, it was in the garage, locked up and everything. They just cut the lock and took the car. Baby car seat and all. And then when we got evicted, you know, we were trying to cram all our stuff in that little bitty U-Haul and get out of there before the police came and all that. And God, I never want to live that way again. You know, not wanting to face reality, having children and being like a child myself, not wanting to accept responsibility and do the right thing, and then bringing kids into the world. You know, I'm blessed that God gave me those opportunities, but thank God I found recovery, that those kids didn't have to suffer anymore. And I can remember I sold the refrigerator before we moved because someone was willing to offer me some money for it. And we were living out of a cooler with two kids. And we had sandwiches and a little bit of milk and, you know, not much. And I got to tell you this one thing. My oldest, she was 5 at the time, and, you know, I'd be up all night using, and then I'd have to watch her in the daytime. So needless to say, I was trying to nap on the couch, and I woke up, and she's got her little friends in the house offering them snacks and said, do you want another one? And I'm looking like, what are they eating? Packets of ketchup. Oh, my God. I cannot believe that my child was giving out snacks of packets of ketchup. Would you like another one? You know. And I felt so bad, you know. Worst mother ever. And the police came to the door one time and had a report that I wasn't taking proper care of my children. And I swear to God, this is a true story. I said, you must be talking about the woman down the street, because you're not talking about me. And I was totally serious. I thought, they couldn't be here for me. And just to live that way and not know that I didn't know anything. And I can remember laying in bed and thinking, there's got to be a better way. But what is it? God, please, help me. And I wanted to die. I really did. And so we decided to do the geographical change again, come back to Maryland. There was no crack when I left, so maybe it won't be there. And when we came back, you know, of course, that's not going to help. There'll be drugs anywhere you go. You know, you can't get away from it. And my husband, he just put everything down. He was like, it's time to grow up. I'm going to quit. I was like, how can you quit? And he couldn't understand, how come you can't quit? So it almost broke us up after, you know, years and years of being married. And I started wondering, what is wrong with me? If he can do it, how come I can't? And I felt suicidal. I just wanted to step out in front of a moving car, you know, just take me out quick. And he had a broken leg, and it was he couldn't drive. And I swear the option of dropping a cement block on my foot so maybe I couldn't drive was starting to look like a good option. Maybe I won't be able to go cop, you know, if I got a broken foot. I know I'd find a way. You know, that's part of the insanity. And I had found, the first time I ever heard of Narcotics Anonymous, I was over a friend's house and we were using, and she had an IP on her bed. And here we were, you know, smoking crack, and I said, what is this? And so I said, can I take this home? I want to go show my husband, you know. I'm going to tell him this is the solution, you know. And of course, I didn't mean it. I didn't want to go to a meeting or anything. I just wanted to shut him up. And so I took it home, and he said, You know, and we started making a couple phone calls, mostly him, but about some treatment or some way to fix me. And when I first went to treatment, it was a detox, and I gave them 7 days to fix me, and I told them, you know, I need to be better in 7 days. I will give you a week, and I need to be better. I'm busy. I got a life, and I got to get back home. And my husband was going out of town, and his mom was in charge of the finances, and I had to go to her if I wanted a pack of cigarettes or soda or, you know, and here I am, a grown woman, and got to ask for money for cigarettes because she didn't know what I was really going to do with it, and she was in charge. And I wanted to leave that rehab early, and he left me the car, and the rehab said, no, we want the keys. And, you know, the addict stinking thinking, I gave him a key. Of course, it wasn't to that car because I had to have some control. I need my car keys in case I decide I need to leave in the middle of the night. And I stayed, but when I left, I didn't listen to their instructions. I didn't read the book. I didn't listen to everything they told me. And I said, well, I love these people I was in rehab with. I'm just going to hang with them. And we were all a bunch of sick addicts, you know, and somebody came up with the idea, well, let's get something. And I was like, okay, you know, and off we were to the races again. And I had to realize that I have to stay away from people that are using. And even if they're brand new to recovery and I'm brand new to recovery, that's not a good combination. I need to stay around people that have more time, that are going to tell me if they think, you know, I'm in danger or I'm in relapse or, you know, I'm doing something wrong. They will pull me up on it and say, Betty, I don't think that's a very good idea. And I had to learn things one at a time out of that book and realize that everything that's in there is written for a reason and it's been tested. You know, I tried only using on the weekends. That didn't work. I tried only taking $5 with me, and of course I'd find more money or, you know, get fronted or whatever. And everything, switching, oh, I'm only going to smoke weed this time, you know. And none of that ever worked because I'm an addict, you know. And I had to surrender to everything in that book is right. I don't know who knew me and wrote all that stuff, but somebody must have been, you know, writing about me. And then I discovered there's a whole network of people out there just like me. And I'm not alone. And that's what NA stands for, is never alone. And that just means the world to me. So after I started surrendering and getting a little bit of time and asking for rides and reaching out, and I got a sponsor. Of course, I tried to con her a few times and told her I needed money and stuff. And she saw right through me. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, she knows me too. Of course she does. She's an addict too. But I would get a little bit of time together. And I was talking about this on the way here with other people in the car. And I'd go out and celebrate. I'd go to the bar and say, look what I got. You know, I got a key bag. And they'd say, well, let me buy you a drink. So needless to say, that wasn't working. And I had to listen to everything they were telling me. Don't go around those places and you won't pick up. And I said, okay. You know, I thought I could do it my way. I thought I was a little different, but no, I'm not. I'm not unique. And so I stopped going to those places. And once in a while on the way home, the car would be wanting to turn into that bad neighborhood. And sometimes I had to go around that neighborhood and take the long way because that car just wanted to turn. And I shared about that at a meeting. And I said, you know, it is really hard to go by that street. And I felt like such a baby because I take the long way. I can't go by a neighborhood. But in the beginning of recovery, I couldn't. It was too damn hard. I want to see who's on that street. You know, who's out there? And so it got a little bit easier. I got a little bit of time together. I started working a couple steps, just the first couple. I didn't want to go too far. You know, I didn't want to look at too much stuff because that might take me back out there. And when they say a fearless moral inventory, I'm scared, so I can't do that. You know, I'm not fearless yet, so I must not be ready. And I took my time and took my time. And I don't recommend that to anybody because I ended up relapsing. Y'all saw that coming, didn't you? Well, that's what happens, you know. And I stopped coming to meetings. I thought, well, I've heard everything people have to say. You know, I've heard all the stories. I read the book, you know, and what more is there? I'm busy. I got kids. I got a life, you know. And so the meetings got less and less and less. And the sponsor, you know, I wasn't talking to her anymore. And so I went a couple years without a meeting, which means I was in relapse. I just hadn't picked up yet. And then when the stuff hit the fan and my dad died and my husband had an affair and I didn't want to feel, I knew what would take me out of it. And that's what I did. And I thought, well, I can always go back. I know what works. I've already, you know, experienced that. But what I didn't realize was it was so hard to come back. I kept saying, well, I'll do it next week. You know, and I procrastinated it. It took 3 years of using and a lot of money later. And finally I came back with my tail between my legs and said, you know, I was so embarrassed. I thought y'all were going to laugh at me and say, well, you're stupid. You knew, you know, you've seen people do it all the time. You know, why didn't you just take, you know, the advice of the book? Why did you have to go through that? No one did that. They hugged me and they said, welcome home. And we're glad to see you. Yes. And we were wondering, you know, if you were going to make it back here. And thank God that I did. And this time I had a surrender like I didn't have that first time. And it says in Recovering Relapse that it might, you might need that blast, that nuclear blast of some kind to give you that surrender. And this time I believe I had that. And I got involved and I started, you know, doing what I needed to do, not just picking and choosing the things I wanted to do, but everything they told me. Oh, service work? Sure. You know, I'll do this? Sure. You know, make coffee? Sure, I'll do that. And at first I had all these service positions because I wanted to do everything. I wanted to dive in and I was going to a lot of meetings and it's hard in the beginning to balance the family and the meetings and the service work and the housework and the groceries and then a job on top of all that. You know, it's hard. I felt, I describe it like a clown juggling balls. And I just felt like at any time I'm going to drop all these balls at once and it's going to be over. But as you keep coming back, it starts to get easier. You know, you make time for your meetings. You schedule your other things around the meetings. And my children know, and my husband knows, that my recovery has to come first, or I'm not going to have a family. I'm not going to have kids. I'm not going to have a job or a house if I don't have this. So this has to come first. And sometimes the kids give me a hard time and say, Mom, you're never home. I am home, but I have a lot of things to do, and I'm busy, you know, and I help newcomers. I help other people. I give rides. I do step work, you know, on top of doing H&I and area service and regional. And, you know, now I wasn't working, and now I'm back to work full time. And it's hard to make time for everything I want to do, but I have to remember where I came from, and I don't want to go back. So I have to do the best I can do. Some weeks I get 4 or 5 meetings. Some weeks I get 3. It's got to be at least 3. And I found that balancing part. Most of the time I don't go to meetings on weekends because I leave that to my family and that works for me. So I go like Monday through Friday on, you know, 3 or 4 of those nights. My home group's on a Friday. I think that's real important for me because Friday was always a big party day. Not that any of them weren't, but. And it started at a shelter. And I picked that meeting because it reminded me that at any time I could be homeless. And it was a men's shelter. And I didn't mind because it just felt right to me that I need to remember where I came from and where I'm headed if I choose to pick up. And after a little while, we had to move our home group because the police would come in, and you know how addicts are with police. If we see them, we're like, what's going on? You know, but they were there for someone else, but we didn't want them hearing what was going on in our meeting. So we had to move, and the meeting has really grown. And that shows me that this thing is working, you know, and it's attraction. and people are finding out about Narcotics Anonymous through public information and word of mouth and H&I, and, you know, they're finding out there's hope. And I remember when I was so hopeless and no one told me about NA. When I was in California and stuff, I knew there was another fellowship, but that was about alcohol, and I had more than just an alcohol problem. And I didn't want to go there because I didn't want to be like my dad, and he went there. And I thought, you know, that that's not what I was, because I didn't have a drinking problem. But yet drinking would do in a pinch, and it was less expensive, so if I needed a buzz, that would work. It just wasn't my drug of choice. I am so thankful to NA. I never felt accepted in my whole life. You know, from the time I was a kid and in my family, you people are not my blood family, but you know me better than my blood family. And that is amazing how that works. You know, people that have been with me all my life don't understand me nearly as much as you guys do. My family was religious, and I've never been religious, but I've always believed in God. And I was made to go to church, and I would stand there, and I would judge people. Oh, I like her shoes, and I like her purse. And, you know, I'd just amuse myself. But my dad would be sleeping, and, you know, he'd be drunk, and I thought, what's the point of coming here? And then as I got older, I don't knock anyone for their belief or their religion, but I have gotten so close to my God that he shows me things and works through people and says things through people. You know, it's a miracle that he wants anything to do with me after all the things that I've done. You know, he never turned his back on me. I turned my back on him, and I didn't feel worthy to speak to him. Because I thought, you know, I was not worth anything. Why would he want to hear from me? And a good example is this program subcommittee calling me. I've been sharing it in my home group that I didn't even volunteer. I didn't know who it was when the person called me and the kids took a message. And I said, I don't know that person, but I do give my phone number out a lot. You know, could have been someone like that. And I called back, and I kept getting a machine, and it was a very spiritual message, like, may you walk in the light of the Lord, and I thought, oh, is this person going to ask me to sponsor him, because I am not religious. I'm not going to quote passages and psalms and all that, but I believe in God, and I have a lot of faith. And so I called her back, and she said, I wanted to ask you to speak at the convention. I said, oh, thank God she didn't want me to sponsor. And I said, how did you get my number? You know, why are you calling me? And she said, somebody said you'd be good to speak. And I said, wow, that's got to be God speaking, you know, and it's a total God thing. And I said, I'd be honored to, you know, and I was really nervous before I came up here, but and then I thought about it, and I said, why be nervous? Y'all are just like me. You're not going to judge me. I haven't done anything unique. You know, as much crazy stuff as I've done, I'm sure most of you have done the same thing or something similar. And the other thing I wanted to share that was a real God thing is I lost my job in January, and it was really stupid the way I was fired for missing a Subway emergency half-hour-long meeting about sandwiches. And so I figured this must be not meant to be, you know. God's in charge. If I'm going to get fired for missing a half-hour-long meeting, I guess I don't need that job. So I tried to take it in stride, and I said, well, maybe I can rest on my laurels and, you know, get unemployment. And they were fighting me for it, and I had to appeal and then, you know, wait and appeal again and wait. And meanwhile, when I appeal, I went there and my boss was sitting right there and, oh, hi, Betty, how are you? And, you know, I was nice to him and all because of this program. And I told my husband, you know, I saw him and, you know, he's doing pretty well. He was like, what? why are you speaking to him? I said, because I can't hold a grudge. It's not going to do me any good. You know, it is what it is, for real, you know. I don't really blame him. It's a corporate thing, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Well, I just got approved for unemployment with a 9-week penalty that I was partly in the wrong because I did miss the meeting and I did have notice. But I'm an addict. I forgot, you know. I burned a lot of brain cells. So I just got approved and I earned 2 weeks of unemployment. And then I get a phone call from another Subway that I haven't even applied at. And I'm sitting at home and they ask me, do you want a job? I said, I didn't even apply there. You know, how'd you get my number? Well, by word of mouth, a girl I used to work with that got fired from the same Subway was now at this one with a different owner and said, you want to come to work Monday through Friday, 9 to 3, no weekends, no nights. I was like, this has got to be God. For real. And I couldn't say no to that, so I just started this week. I told him when he hired me at the end of last week, well, I got to go away this weekend, so if you're going to hire me, you got to know in advance. I planned this out a year ahead of time. I'm not going to miss Ocean City. And I did tell him I could work Thursday and then come if you need me. And he said, no, you can go. So that was a blessing. That was God saying, you know, he's given me exactly what I need. Not what I want, you know, because I do want a better job with more money and, you know, all that. But he's given me what I need. My needs are met. And he knows exactly how to keep me in line and how to take care of me, which helps me take care of other people. One of the things that I have really gotten busy on this last year is sponsorship. Oh my God, God has put sponsees in my life. This is the busiest I've ever been, you know, being unemployed and being so busy because people calling and wanting to do step work and wanting rides, which makes me go to more meetings. And, you know, this is the way it works. And working with newcomers, it reminds me of what it was like. This coming Friday, as long as I keep doing what I need to do, I'll be celebrating 9 years. Thank you. That's the most time I've ever put together. And I couldn't do it without you guys and without God. And my family usually comes to the celebration, of course, but I can't share as freely as I can here, you know, because my husband's sitting right there. Some stuff they say I don't have to tell him because I might hurt him. So I can tell you guys because you know what it's like and you've been there, but some things he's just not ready to hear, you know, and he might never hear. I don't know. We'll see. It's in God's time. But I feel so totally grateful and blessed that God has given me another chance. I wanted to share something about my childhood that when I was 8 years old, my brother and my mother were killed in a car accident, and I was the only survivor. And for the longest time, I thought, why, God? Why did you let me live? What was so special about me? And I had survivor's guilt, and I thought, I didn't deserve to live. And I thought, it was my fault because they were taking me to school. It was my fault because my brother wanted that front seat and I let him. And if that would have been me, I would have died. Now looking back on that, I think, thank you, God. Thank you for sparing me. My children wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have found recovery. I couldn't have helped other people. I couldn't go into the jail and give those women help. I just feel so totally blessed that God thought enough of me to keep me around, you know. And I don't know from day to day when my time will come, but I thank him every day. And working that third step and waking up in the morning and saying, God, if you have something for me to do, you know, wake me up. And he does. And I've given that to my children. They know about recovery. Two of my children were born when I was in recovery the last time, and they had never seen me use till I relapsed, and now they've seen me use too. And when I say I need a meeting, they don't argue with me. They know I need to go to a meeting because they don't want to see that part of mom ever again. And what a blessing that is.
How are we?
Still got more time. Thanks, Liz. You made me have to talk longer. I wish that I could give this to people that need it. My sister was a good example of that. She was an alcoholic, and she was down in Florida, and they have this law called the Baker Law, which is quite a coincidence because my last name's Baker. And if you say that you feel like dying or want to kill yourself, they can commit you without your permission for a whole week. And she had said that, and they locked her up for a week. And while she was in there, she detoxed. So my nephew had called me and said, "Aunt Betty, can you come down, you know, and teach my mom about recovery?" And I've been wanting to for years, but you can't make someone recover. I took her to meetings. "Do you want this? You know, I'll buy you a book. I'll introduce you to friends." She said, "I'm not like you, Betty. I just can't reach out and talk to people like you do." And, you know, I wasn't like this in the beginning. I couldn't talk to just anybody. But you realize that you fit in, and it gets so much easier. And when I left, you know, she continued to go to a few meetings, but she didn't get this, you know, and she ended up dying. And on Thanksgiving, and they didn't find her for 2 days. And I wish that I could have saved her, you know, but we can't save anyone. All we can do is pray and set an example. And I was so tired of hearing that, but until it was drilled in my head, and even with the newcomers, that, you know, I want to save. I want to put them in my back pocket, take them with me, and say, "Don't go in bad places. Don't meet with those bad people. You know, don't think bad thoughts of yourself. You know, you're worth recovery." And I can't save them. All I can do is be there if they call, if they want to go to a meeting, if they want to ride, if they want to work a step. You know, I'm here for you. If not, I'm sorry, you know. I have a sponsor that, she's a great woman. She's what I need as a sponsor, but she's a real caretaker, and she takes in people way, way easier than I would. I care for people, and I'll give you a ride. I'm not going to invite you to sleep on my couch, you know, because you got 1 day clean, and I have a family, and I can't expose my family to that. You know, they didn't sign up for all that. They're not addicts. But I'll give you a ride, and I'll be there if you want to talk on the phone. And when I give out my number, it's I tell them, night or day, if you're going to pick up, you can call, because the phone's by my headboard, and I will pick up. I might not bring you back to my house, like I said, but I'll answer the phone. My sponsor, she brings people in her house, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm not going that far. Maybe I'm not exactly like her, but I'm exactly what I'm supposed to be. And I get so much, I don't know if any of you guys do service work, but I want to give back what was freely given to me. And I cannot pay this program back what they've given to me. So if I can do something, give someone a ride, make some coffee, go into the local institution, you know, and give some hope to some women, I'm more than happy to do those things. And I went this last week into the jail to see the women, and I have heard so many stories that I store up in case I ever want to use. I draw on those things that I don't want to go there. I was telling one of my sponsees on the way here that this one woman that I met in there, she had killed her own mother because she was in a blackout. And when she came out of the blackout, she was like, "Mom!" And she didn't even know that she killed her. And she was looking around and said, "Why isn't anyone calling the police? you know, because they're all using. They don't want the police to come. So the woman is laying there on the floor, dead. And I don't know how I could forgive myself, but I know if I came in here, you guys would love me through it. You know, and that's what I had to do for her, is say, you know, we're not responsible for our addiction. We're responsible for our recovery. And what are you going to do about it today? You know, and forgive yourself. You know, we weren't in our right minds. I know I wasn't in my right mind. And I'm lucky I didn't lose everything. You know, this November will be 32 years I've been married. I cannot believe he stuck with me through relapses and using and all that crap that I put him through, and he's still by my side. Now that is a real good man, and I am lucky to have him. Just a side note, this doesn't have anything to do with recovery, but the night I met him, he told me he was going to marry me, and I was like, you are so crazy. You know, people don't have to, you don't have to say that to, you know, get me in bed or whatever. You don't have to marry me. And here we are, 32 years later. Who would have thought? You know, God is so good to me that he put him in my life because that's what I needed at the time. And he stuck around. And I have 4 beautiful children, 2 boys and 2 girls. And I have a beautiful grandson who's 2 years old. And I wouldn't have been able to see any of this if I was out there using and have died. I thank God every day that he has spared me from those horrors of addiction, that, you know, I didn't die out there on the street. And I don't wish that on anybody. I wish that we could bring more people in. And through the service work, and, you know, I've been on public information and getting the word out and putting flyers out in shelters and health departments. And I was telling a sponsee, I used to be on the phone line, and we used to have a pager, and there would be a number come across the pager, and it would be an addict wanting to go to a meeting, and you'd have to call back that number and tell them where there was one and see if they needed a ride. Thank God that addicts were there when we need a ride and need to find a meeting, and that those things have been put in place. I want to thank y'all for letting me share. I'm about out of things to talk about. Other than I love you, and if no one has told you today, you know, I love you, and I'm glad that you're here. Thank you for letting me share.